This is episode 83 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. Happy holidays. I hope you are getting to spend lots of quality time with friends and family this season. I'm wrapping up the last of a few year-end projects, and then I'll be off for the final week of the year. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to 2019. Something tells me that it's just going to be an amazing year. It feels like things have been really set up. The foundation is here, and 2019 is going to be amazing. I've got the date set for my first Extraordinary Women Connect event of 2019, which is January 22nd. So mark your calendars if you're here in Denver. Check out my website at camigilner.com to learn more about the amazing Circle of Inspiration facilitator panel members that I've lined up. And here's a hint. We're going to be talking about quantum physics and business success. What a combo, right? I am so excited. Right up this soulful, inspired girls alley for sure. I'm also wanting to share a bit of exciting news on my end. I was just selected to be a premier success coach for eWomen Network, one of only 20 women in the nation. I had to compete for one of only 12 open spots in 2019. So it was quite an honor to have been selected from the hundreds of women who applied. Pretty cool celebration for me to end the year on. And I know many of our listeners are eWomen Network members. And since I'm a member of the podcast, of their podcast network, I hope to meet you in 2019. And today I want to thank all of you for being part of my community, for tuning in and listening to the many extraordinary women whom I have had the pleasure of interviewing. I feel very blessed and honored. And it was all of your support that helped Extraordinary Women Radio be recognized as the best business podcast in the 2018 annual People's Choice Podcast Awards. Again, such an honor. So two big celebrations that I'm making at the end of this year. I learned so much from my amazing guest, and that's what makes this podcast so special for me. I know for my listeners, and I want to thank all of you. Our guest today is Gail Browning, the founder and chief executive officer of Emergenetics International, which has offices throughout North America, Asia, and Europe. Gail's life work has focused on helping people celebrate who they are and recognize the brilliance of their gifts. You can see why I'm a fan. And I love the Emergenetics work that Gail developed, and I'll tell you more about my personal experience with Emergenetics in the interview. Gail's passion for education led to the creation of Emergenetics Profile. She shares the story of starting Emergenetics, and she also tells the story of her biggest life challenge, the stroke she suffered in 2003, and how this setback ended up teaching her a whole lot about herself, about her company, and about her relationships. It was this personal growth that led to her latest book on leadership, Work That Works. Dr. Browning has been recognized as Colorado's Outstanding Entrepreneurial Woman of the Year by the Women's Vision Foundation. In 2003, the Denver Business Journal honored her as one of Colorado's Outstanding Women and Businesswoman of the Year. In 2014, Emergenetics International was named one of the top 50 Colorado companies to watch by the Denver Business Journal. Emergenetics has been recognized by Inc. magazine as one of America's fastest growing companies for the past 7 consecutive years. Let's meet the fabulous Dr. Gail Browning. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Gail.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, you know, you are the founder and CEO of Emergenetics, and this is a tool that really gave me some pretty big insights nearly a decade ago. It's really, I'd love to share that story with you.
Well, thank you. You have a very amazing brain, so I'm glad that you had some wonderful insights.
Yeah, you know what it was is I worked in the corporate world. You and I were just chatting about this. I worked in the corporate world for about 20, 25 years. And when I did, I was always very left brain thinking. I was in spreadsheets all the time. I definitely was in the left side of my brain. I was working budgets. I was, you know, doing that sort of thing. And when I took the Emergenetics test, when I left the corporate world, it was shortly thereafter. I was a small mastermind group, and we got together and we all took the Emergenetics. And Christine Kopik was one of one of your facilitators at that time. Mm-hmm. And she was one of the women in our group. And as she looked at my profile, and it came back that it was between the left brain and the right brain thinking. And I thought I was all left brain thinking. And I've always had said, I'm not a very creative person. Let the creative people do their creative thing. And what that came back with was like, I was like 83% right brain thinking. And it was such an aha for me, and how I wasn't really nurturing that part of my, you know, my personal talents, I guess you'd call that.
Right. Right. That's a story that I think I've heard many, many times. And it always is distressing to me to think that if you had known this way back when, it might have made a difference in where you are today.
Right. I mean, it's like you would have made different choices. And, you know, it's just such great insights to find. I'm a big fan of Emergenetics.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So you have a lot of passion. And one thing, let's talk about passion. I know you share my belief that passion is really critical to being able to do what we love to do. What are you most passionate about, and how did that lead you to where you are today?
You know, I'd like to answer your second question. You gave me two questions.
And, I did.
And I'd like to answer the second question first, and then I'll tell you about my passion, all you may get it from my story. How did I get to Emergenetics is a question that people always ask me. So here's my story. My mother and my grandmother were teachers, and both of them individually taught for well over 30 years. I grew up sitting around the kitchen table with them talking about how Johnny or Susie could or could not read. And in that conversation, I would say to myself, well, if you could only figure out how a child could think, you could be a better teacher. it's very interesting how you set a vision when you're 10 years old, and by gum, it can work. Several years later, I am now in my first year of teaching, and I give my students a questionnaire so that I can get to know them better. And the questionnaire asks questions like, what's your name? What's your nickname? What's your dog's name? And one of the questions was, sometimes I think about. And Dale Orton, who was in the third row, third seat back, wrote, sometimes I think about why teachers like you ask dumb questions like this. Well, I was totally horrified. It was my first year of teaching. I expected that every child to love me to death, and I certainly loved them. And I saw that statement as a disconnect in terms of him and me.
Right.
And so I did the only thing I knew how to do, and that was to go after him. I'd give him a hug, which in those days you could do that. Told him he was doing a wonderful job, and just constantly going after him. What I know today is that was exactly the wrong thing to do with a child, because now I know his profile. So I've told this story and usually end the story by saying, I'm sure that if you talk to Dale Orton, he would tell you I was the absolute worst teacher I ever had. About 3 or 4 years ago, I found myself in Omaha. I started off teaching in Omaha, And I knew that he was a physician, an emergency room physician at Methodist Hospital. And I was feeling really guilty because I had just come back from Asia where I'd done a lecture, and this is the first time I actually had ever told the story. And in telling the story, I'm using his name.
Right.
So in Emergenetics, we have a lot of issues about confidentiality, and I'm feeling really terrible. I've told the story, and I've used his name. So I tracked him down. And had an opportunity to talk to him
in the hallway
of Methodist Hospital, and I tell him the story, and I said, "I am so sorry. I must have been just horrible." And he's a lot taller than I am. He put his arm around my shoulders, and he said, "Oh no," he said, "don't you remember when I went out into the playground and I had made a rocket ship for some project we were doing in science, and my rocket ship went way up into the air." And he said, "All the students clapped, and I became the star of the class." He said, "You were my favorite teacher." And he said, "That's the reason I'm in science today."
Oh my gosh. What he remembered and what his experiences that really stood out were completely different than what yours were.
Yeah, exactly. And he gave me permission to use his name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, more time now passes, and I'm now teaching at the university. And one day I start reading about Roger Sperry's work on cerebral lateralization, which the pop psychology then became using the right brain, left brain. We don't use these words anymore, but from that time we did. And as I read this, I said, "Oh, this is it. This is how I can understand how children think." And eventually I connected up with Wendell Williams. Wendell lives in Florida, and it's really interesting, we've never lived in the same place, but we connected up. He was getting his PhD at the time. And I said, "You know, if we could only figure out how to take Roger Sperry's work and make it work and connect it into how people behave, I think this would be a big deal."
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Emergenetics started. Today we have a representation in 40 countries, and we've grown across North America, Central Asia, Europe, and Africa. And we've got 2,400 plus Emergenetics associates supporting organizations worldwide. So that's an amazing thing.
It totally
to
is.
Think, I mean, you have to remember, I started teaching, I'm going to tell you, 1963. I was very young, I need to tell you. Dale Orton, by the meantime, has retired. But I always knew I would work. And when I met my husband, we had an agreement that no matter what, I would always be able to work. Now, that probably sounds pretty funny for most of your listeners, but for 1966, which is when we got married, this is
that
not
wasn't
what women
so,
did.
Right, exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I always thought I'd be a teacher, and so all these years I thought my passion was about education. What I know now, though, this is now answering your first question. What I know now is that my passion is really helping people understand their gifts, mm-hmm. no matter how old they are. And it doesn't matter whether we're in education or business.
And I bet you have seen so many lives changed over the years by people tapping into understanding their gifts like that.
Yeah, I really have. And it's been very rewarding. And I must say that I've learned a lot about myself as well.
Right, I'm sure. So what have you learned about yourself through that journey that as this shaped, as you know, as you built the company that you built from being a teacher, from taking this idea, the seed of this idea, and following that through. What have you learned about yourself?
I think the biggest thing I learned about initially what I learned about myself was that I'm going to have to use some jargon. I'm a trimodal thinker. I have a preference in analytical, conceptual, and social preferences. And I always knew that when I'd go to make a decision, it oftentimes took me longer than most people because I was always having to think around all those little preferences before I could come up with a decision. Also, I found out that my behaviors are at 95th percentile on our scale, which is the behaviors are expressiveness, assertiveness, and flexibility. And I always knew that when I go into a crowd, I always knew I was a little different. And that sometimes it caused me some issues. For example, when I was in school, I was always the kid that the teacher would write on the report card. Well, you know, she's doing really good work, and she's so enthusiastic, but my goodness, she needs to keep her mouth shut. And of course, today I see that as a real gift.
Absolutely.
Seeing it down on a piece of paper was helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, it's having that, you know, seeing what that social side of you brings out and how that has opened. I mean, that's probably why you were able to go build a company like you were able to build.
Well, I have a great passion for people and having those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I learned from my work, I think I always knew it, I just didn't have the data behind it, is that if you could collaborate and put people together and if you can communicate with them, there ain't anything you can't do.
Right.
I'm pretty clear that I'm not the star of the team. I'm pretty clear that the star of the team is the person who can put people together and make it work, because everybody has a different idea and you need to listen to all of them before you come up with your final decision.
Right. Right. You get to better decisions that way.
Right.
So you had a stroke a few years back. How long ago was that?
15 years.
15 years ago. So talk to us a little bit about what happened and how coming back after that, how that went for you.
okay. My neurologist said that we should not call this a stroke. We should call it a brain attack.
Okay.
And I've been trying to get people to change the word forever, but I haven't done a very good job of doing it. but I thought it was a good point, because a stroke kind of makes you look like you're going to show up with a cane and or you may be in a wheelchair or some horrible thing happened. My stroke was not like that. I woke up in the morning and I literally could not read, write. I could not talk. Later, I found out I also could not read or write. I went into the restroom and looked in the mirror, and I thought, gee, I look kind of funny. And suddenly dawned on me that I actually might have been having a stroke. And I went back into the bedroom and I said to my husband, for a year I told this story, I said to my husband, I think I'm having a stroke. I need you to take me to the hospital. And he quickly jumped out of bed and started to put his clothes on. And I thought, apparently I'm having a problem. And then I went into the closet to figure out what I was going to wear to the hospital.
Oh, gosh.
And about a year later, he heard me tell this story, and he said, that's not what happened. He said, you came into the bedroom, and you said, mushy, 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 mushy.
Oh.
And in my own head, I was very clear.
Right. But what was coming out of your mouth was not.
Was not it.
Mm.
This was, I was probably at the height of my career as a speaker and as a researcher. And it was pretty interesting that the brain lady had an issue with her brain, because that's, you know,
right.
I used
that's
to talk
the research
about,
you were doing.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. The amazing thing is that I got into the hospital, and then I, as they were doing tests on me, I found out that I couldn't read or write. So I oftentimes will start a seminar or a speech that I'm giving. I almost always start by saying that I've had this brain attack, and I want everybody to understand a couple of things. I have something called expressive aphasia. So what that means is everything in my head is supposedly perfectly fine, but that which comes out my mouth can be kind of tricky. Mm-hmm. So one time I was giving a speech to a group of educators, and somebody in the audience said, "Oh, tell me, what is the difference between how boys think and how girls think?" And I got all excited about it. I said, "Oh my gosh, if I only had my charts here, I could tell you about what happens to boys at certain ages and what happened to girls in terms of their thinking preferences. But it really only works if I can show you my charts." And I went on and on and on talking about the charts. And finally, somebody in the audience raised their hand and said, "Excuse me, but we don't know what the shits are." And I was pretty clear I was saying charts.
And yeah, they're like, "Wait, yeah. Where, what?"
Yeah, so exactly. Funny. So it was at that point then that I started telling everybody about what had happened. And I still do that, because I still don't know, you know,
what's coming out is correct, and it's may not be what's coming out.
Right. Okay. Right. And the nice thing about that, though, is that oftentimes people will come and talk to me about, you know, what's happened to them, or if they've
absolutely
had some kind of an issue. And my issue is, of course, that, the brain is plastic, and you can recover. It's very difficult, but you know, given certain instances, you can recover. I speak today, certainly not like I did way back when. I read quite well, but it took me 5 years before I could read a technical report, so on. So
that was about the time that it took for you to feel like you'd move through all of that?
No, I think I'm still going through it. Writing was the last thing to come back, and I went 8 years without doing an email.
Okay, that might be a blessing.
I should go back to that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I lost all my pronouns and I lost all my prepositions. Mm-hmm. And so it's taken a lot of years for them to come back. And sometimes even now I'll have to holler at somebody in the office, and what does the word you start with? You know,
right.
That kind of thing.
So what was the journey stepping back into working from that? Did you go, how long did you take off of work? I mean, what was it? Did you just jump right back in?
That's the weird part. Physically, I was perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. I was actually on disability for 4 years. But physically I looked quote normal. It wasn't until I opened my mouth that I got into trouble. Here was one of my favorite stories. One day I decided I'd go to the grocery store, and I decided that I would take my food and I'd go through the scanner. And I was doing just fine. I was always giving myself little tests. So I'm going through the scanner, and And then I had put an avocado in the basket, and the avocado doesn't immediately come up, and I can't figure out what to do. So somebody from the tenant from the store came over to help me, and I said, I tried to say to her that I'd had a stroke and I couldn't do this. And she said, oh, here, it's very easy. And she flips that Rolodex around. And then she says, now you take this number and then you push it in here. And she's going on and on and on and on. And I said, oh, I can't do that. Cause for a while I lost all my numbers. And she said, oh, not a problem. I will take care of it for you, and I will take the groceries out to the car. And I thought, okay, this is what happens to people who suffer disabilities,
right.
Because people start treating you differently
versus really understanding what the scenario is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, it was just a constant learning, and it was wonderful, and still is wonderful. Mm-hmm. It was to hear somebody who's been a teacher, who's been an educator, to then have to start all over again.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that aha for you, when you talk about the wonderful part of this, what's the shiny bright side of this?
Well, I think, there are a couple of things. I think, I'm certainly much more empathic, about children and when they start having issues in terms of their learning.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when reading came back, I picked up a Time magazine, and it was literally one morning, and all of a sudden I could read. I was so excited.
Mm.
I decided I needed to read, I'm going to say, trashy things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just to get things going.
Sure.
And then one day I picked up a Pulitzer Prize winning novel, and I was maybe 20 pages into the novel, and I suddenly could not understand what I'd been reading. And it suddenly dawned on me that the sentences were too long. And mm-hmm. So I went back to reading trashy things for a while. As I said to you earlier, it took me 5 years before I got to the point where I could read technical reports. So that's a very empathic understanding. The second part, and maybe in terms of my business, I had to give up control. And that was big. I mean,
right.
That was really big. You know, you're an entrepreneur. You're in charge of everything,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't be that way. And when I was in the hospital, I pretty much had figured out that was the end of my career and the end of my business. And I was totally shocked at the end of the year. And again, the next year, that the business grew quite well without me. Thank you very much. And I've been training people to do my work, but I still was the primary wage earner of the company. And in the end, apparently, I didn't have to be that person. So
it's starting to let that go, right? That you have to do it all, and suddenly it did really well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really interesting. Even today, I have to tell myself, give it up. You've got people around here who do better than you do, so give up the control. It's a big one.
And I think it's a really important lesson for everybody, for our listeners. It's like, we're not always the one that can do something best, and who can do it better than us is a really important question for us to ask ourselves as business owners.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So you've been writing a book that it's Work That Works. What was your motivation for writing Work That Works?
I didn't want to write this book.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I was very unhappy about this. Well, first of all, you know, writing is still an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that I'm at this point in my life where I ought to be able to just go down the road and not have to. Writing a book is a lot of work. Big deal. Yeah,
right.
I've done this before, and this is hard to do. And so an editor from Wiley literally called me up one day, and she said, we've been reading about your work, and we'd really like you to write this book. And I said, well, thank you. I don't think so. And she said, well, think about it. Call me back. So I went into my office staff, and I said, what do you think? And they said, oh, you have to write this book. This will be good for business, yada, yada, yada. So I said, okay, will you help me? And everybody said, yeah, we'll help you. So when people, whenever I talk about the book, write that, the book, Work That Works, I say, okay, please go to chapter 9, which is the last chapter, first. Because the last chapter is called Conclusions and Acknowledgements. And it talks about how the book was written. And so, can I tell you how that worked?
Oh, please.
So in Emergenetics, we very much believe in something called, a WE team, and the WE stands for Whole Emergenetics. And we believe strongly that if you put the right brains together, there isn't anything you can't do. If you have confidence for what it is you're going to do, I'm going to give you the vision, and I promise you there isn't anything you can't do. So I had everybody in my office. There were 40 of us. I had everybody in the office come together, and I said, so I think we're going to write a book, and Wiley wants me to write a book on a positive organization and what you do to make that happen. So what I'd like you to do is take some sticky notes, and I'd like you to write down everything that we do in this organization, and pretty much think about things that we do that you think other organizations don't do. And when we were done, there were 200 notes that we put on the wall.
Oh, wow.
And now I'm telling you this, what I should have started this by telling you that this book was basically written in 2.5 hours. So that was the first time we came together for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So then they came back the next day, and I put them in WE teams. Well, first I had somebody take the 200 notes and put them into like notes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we came up with 7 principles. And so the next day they came back, I put together 7 WE teams.
And when you say WE teams, are you mixing, you're creating a holistic team that is,
yep,
different skill sets from different people showing up at the table?
It's literally in Emergenetics, and we have something called the spectrum, and the spectrum says, here's the person in the room who's the most analytical structural thinker, goes all the way down till we get to somebody like you, who would be the most social conceptual thinker.
Yep.
And then if you go through the list, you can then come up with people who range from, okay, let's think about it rationally, let's think about it structurally, let's think about it socially, let's think about it conceptually. And then also we do some other things so that we know that the behaviors are connected as well, so that we have people on the team who tend to be quiet and others who are very gregarious and so on. So, so I had seven teams.
Mm-hmm.
I gave each team a principle that had been decided the day before. And I said, now I want you to come back with an outline, and I want the outline to say, here's the principle, here's what we think the principle should be called. Give me a story that fits the principle. Tell me if you know any neuroscience that connects in with it, put that in. Give me the steps to implement this particular principle in your organization. And I gave them 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, because if you have the right team, it's mm-hmm. not a big deal.
Right.
And of course, they're all confident, so they know the theory. So I think it was the next day, we had another meeting, and everybody presented their outline. That took an hour. I then took those 7 pieces of paper, and I took them home and hung them on my wall in the kitchen, and then started writing. So I started, I think, because she called me in February, and I started writing, I think, by the end of February, and sent it off to her, finished the 1st of June.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean,
I love the co-creation. The co-creation process that you took to make that happen. It's just brilliant.
Yeah. Well, it's what we do.
Right.
So I love it, because that's what the book's about.
Right. That's really cool. So your first principle in the book is leadership is an inside job. What's the message for that?
Oh, that's the one that I think I had the hardest time with. I think I wrote that maybe 3 or 4 times, because way back when I was working on my dissertation, I read annotative biography that had something like 3,000 listings for leadership. And heaven knows what it is now. And every time I started to write the leadership chapter, it just kept coming out like the things that everybody says. And so somewhere along the way, I thought, okay, I think the team had given me the idea to call it leadership is an inside job. Know yourself. And so the principal asks 3 questions. Number 1, who are you? Number 2, what do you love? And number 3, how can you restore balance to a troubled world? And so that gave me an opportunity, obviously, to talk about emergenetics and how you know yourself, and then how to take your gifts
and make a difference with them.
Make a difference. Yep.
It's, you know what I love about that? That's actually the coaching model that I leverage in my business. It's really about who are you? I mean, even from a branding perspective for a company, for an entrepreneur who's very purpose driven. So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs who are, they're change makers. They want to make a difference. That's their driving factor, you know, behind them. And so starting with that, who are you at your very core, at your very essence, which involves the strengths, the passions, the values of who you are. And then how do you want to make a difference with that? And then what is it you want the world, if you had a message that you could share with the world, what would that be? So to me, I love that arc way that you've painted, because I see the alignment to the work that I'm doing, and I believe that model of starting from the inside out. In fact, I use marketing from the inside out, branding from the inside out, because I think that's what really helps us raise up who we are and really go out and do the work we're meant to be doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when we are doing that, we are standing in our leadership. So I think it's really cool. I love that. Thank you.
I should have talked to you ahead of time. I like your language. It would have been lovely to have put it in that principle.
Well, I tend to think that somehow we get a lot of language dropped in on us, you know, wherever it comes from, that is important language for us right now, you know,
right.
For our world. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is one lesson from your 30 years as a leader that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think, number one, you have to, I'm going to say we have to educate ourselves about that which we are passionate about. And number two, surround ourselves with brilliant people who think differently. And number three, trust their ideas. Give up the control.
Very good.
I love Oscar Wilde's quote, be yourself, everyone else is already taken.
Right.
And I think that's part of knowing who you are so you can go forth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's how we do our best work, if we know who we are.
Yeah.
So, Gail, where can people learn more about you and your work?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you can visit our website at emergenetics.com. And they can subscribe to our blog, connect with us on social media, and learn more about us in the book, Work That Works.
Absolutely. And so, and if people want to take the Emergenetics test, how do they do that?
They can go to our website, and the instructions are all there. We're kind of picky about it. If you're going to do that, we want you to then connect in and be debriefed by somebody in our audience, or in our office, rather.
And that's where you get the real understanding of the work, right?
Yeah, 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 because otherwise it's just a piece of paper.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Gail, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for sharing your amazing journey with us. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for calling. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you thinking about making the next bold move in your life? I invite you to take the Your Next Bold Move quiz at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can jumpstart a passionate and meaningful next chapter. You may also enjoy my book, Fire Dancer, Your Spiral Journey to a Life of Passion and Purpose, which is available on Amazon. In Fire Dancer, you will become intimately connected to your heart's calling and build the courage and resiliency to ignite your what's next. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter, and the links are available on my website. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.